Well, good to see everybody here. I did a little bit of checking. Not terribly many people made the curfew. How many rooms were I in? Not many. Anyway, but how everybody looks really quite bright. And I don't know if you noticed this morning, the Vancouver province has, of course, the front page says no wards. Wards was defeated, I think, 54 to 46, something like that. I think that's editorial clapping. But there's also an editorial in the Vancouver province about the Citizens' Assembly, and it recommends, it talks about the two alternative systems we're looking at, and I think it comes down recommending that, of course, the voters of BC, the citizens of BC, in the end, probably embrace some kind of change. Anyway, that's the nature of the article. Don will make sure that, or we'll try to get this on the website, Don, right? And the story, and I was asked by Hardy and others, the story that was in the Sun on Saturday, he will also get that on the website. So we'll get both stories on the website for you. There was about 40 of us last night who convened very informally in this room. It was a very good session, I think. It was a non-lubricated session, but it still worked well. The lubricated one later, I heard, went better, but they wouldn't allow me in there. And Michelle Miller chaired the session last night very, very well, and it went extremely. We had a good dialogue, and what we talked about almost exclusively for an hour and a half was building the best MMP system and some of the challenges that that presents to us. And we listened very hard to those from rural areas and from the north, to understand as well as we could some of their concerns. And I believe that there was a lot of reaching out to find that understanding and find out where there could be some integration of ideas. Where we ended the evening, where I think a number of people would like us to build on today, if that seems agreeable to people here, is that, as I think Anna said so well, is that what we have learned, it takes a long time to learn the obvious sometimes, you know. And what we learned is there's no perfect system. If you remember, Ken said this, I think, the first day. There's no perfect system. And that as we try to build MMP, it has a lot of strengths, but there are some weaknesses to it, just as there are strengths and weaknesses to the current system and STV. And while we were building STV, we did find a mechanism in STV that dealt in some way, in some reasonable way, with some northern concerns about the local representation. MMP has a lot of strengths, but one of its strengths does not happen to be in the clearest way of dealing with local representation. But there are ways in which one can help address that. So not a perfect system. Other systems deal with, you know, address some of our values better than others. I think a recognition of that was very, very important for us last night. We also felt that what we ought to do today, is beginning today, is start building the best MMP system as we agreed upon in general kinds of principles yesterday, but start with the principle of the open regional lists, and that using open regional lists is probably the best way in which MMP allows you to respond to the local concerns and regional concerns, and allows you to do that. That's the best mechanism available by MMP. The other thing we talked about last night, just to conclude our conversation, is that we felt that in our other considerations section, we must deal with a phenomenon that Canada's reminded us of many times, that relatively the north, the rural areas, are becoming more sparse. There are fewer people there relative to the urban areas, and there are certain kinds of constitutional kinds of things that we must comply with. So we really ought to address that. We ought to talk about further infrastructure for the north, so that citizens of the north do have access to their constituency offices and such, and do everything that can be done about making it as easy as possible for citizens of the north to have the kind of access that you would have if you were in a more metropolitan area. So those are the kinds of discussions we had. I think overall it was a good discussion. And generally, I think, with the 40 who were there, general reasonable consensus to move forward, build MMP, build on the principle of open regional lists. Now, if there are others who were there last night or have a view on this one, we'd be very pleased to hear from them. Wilf.
Thank you, Jack. I agree with you. We had an excellent chair last night. I think the discussion was very good. I don't know how far we got, but one of the things that I felt happened was that most of the people there were trying very hard to understand and perhaps to accept the problems that we in the rural remote areas talked about. And I find that very gratifying, and I thank you all.
Thank you, Wilf. Craig?
Yes. I think it's important to be moving along the process. And David's idea last night of sort of starting the frame or as a framework to build a MMP system on of open regional lists, I think that that's how we can move the process by starting there and adding those little bits and pieces, because we tried to add the bits and pieces, but we didn't know what we were adding them to yesterday, so it became kind of confusing. So if we start there, I think we can accelerate the process and actually come up with something quite decent by lunch. Thanks.
Other comments on moving forward as we've described? Fred.
I'd just like to have an explanation of what exactly do you mean by open regional list.
Ken Carty will explain that within about 2 minutes, if you agree that that's how we go. I'm not even going to try, although I do think I understand it. But I'm going to let Ken do it. He's the expert at that. Shall we begin there? Okay, Ken Carty.
Okay, I think that Ray put it really well yesterday when we were saying we've got all these bits and pieces and it's hard to know kind of where we started. And so I thought I would just jot down the kind of basic pieces we are going to be thinking about, and they're kind of on the left there. And, you know, there's all kind of variations, all of them. And we did kind of have a pretty broad consensus in terms of the votes you held on two of them, that we wanted to move to a system that was basically a proportional one, and the candidates ought to be free to run on two sides. So really, I guess the question is where maybe are the critical things that are best to start with? And I think that the group last night seemed to think that if we could start around the notion of what kind of lists they might be and how they might be organized, that was for many people a kind of a stumbling block, and if there was some sort of agreement on that, then maybe that would in some sense open the discussion and help us move forward. And I think David and some others suggested that what one would want to think about was that that the system would be regionalized, that there would be regional lists, and that those lists would be open. I mean, those were the propositions he was putting forward. Wasn't entirely clear to me whether his idea was that the allocation would be province-wide or regional. Just like when your screen goes. But we can come back to that. But the basic question is, in some sense, is there going to be an important and significant regional component that would be involved in lists, so that the people coming from the proportional side would come from regionalized lists of some kind, and would those lists be open? And if that's where we would want to start, that would probably kind of provide a fairly basic statement of quite important dimensions of this kind of system, and then we could, following up with Craig saying, then kind of move on to pieces around that, because that would then really frame questions about where you wanted to allocate it and what some of the kind of plumbing questions about distributions and so on would be. So maybe since you had, or people have said that you're responsible for this, David, or Jack said it anyway, I didn't, maybe you might want to say something about what your idea was.
Thank you, Ken. Basically, what I was looking for last night was a platform that we could all basically agree on and move forward. and sort of a framework of what this MMP system that we're working on would look like. And, you know, I took a stab at putting together something that I think that we could all sort of agree on without too much extra work, and say, you know, okay, this looks reasonable, and this is some of what it looks like. Then we can fill in some of the details. Some of the details we can actually leave perhaps until later, like we left some of the details on STV. I mean, some of the thing about, you know, at what level you allocate list seats, maybe it's a detail that we don't have to get into today. But really with MMP, for me to feel comfortable with MMP, I believe we must not take seats out of the north, which means that we really have to have regional lists. And so everybody would benefit from that. And the second principle I looked at was everywhere that MMP has been introduced recently in Scotland and Wales and in New Zealand, the voters, when they have been surveyed after the fact, don't like the idea that the parties control who gets the seats on the list. That's pretty universal. It may be okay in Germany where they've gotten used to it for the last 50 years, but it's not something that's well accepted. So I took a stab at let's keep those lists open so that the voters have control of the order of the list. So that means that the ballot you get would include a decision on your vote for who would represent the local constituency, and then would also include lists of the candidates that the parties have put forward for the list in your region, and then you would indicate on that ballot in some way the preferred candidates on the list from the party that you would vote for. And it's basically the thought that something we might be able to agree on and move forward.
Art?
Is there any reason that we can't take each one of those blocks up there, principal, balance, candidate options, and if we're not clear on what that means, you could explain it, and we could take a vote on it right here and now. Get the show on the road.
Well, I think what David is suggesting is that we start with seat assignments. Should they come from regional areas, or should they come from a province-wide area? And he's also suggesting that we should look at the question of lists first. So rather than going down from top to bottom, he's saying, and I think Edith said, and a couple of other people said yesterday, well, maybe that's the wrong order. In fact, we ought to start with some basic fundamental things, identify those, and then that helps, in fact, contextualize the other kinds of things. So, but we can certainly talk about any of the particular elements. The seat assignment question is really, as David, I think, put it, if you're going to have list seats, should they come off a province-wide list, or should those lists be regionalized to provide a kind of regional dimension? Then there's a subsidiary question of how many regions and what they'd be, but that can be a plumbing kind of question. There's a kind of fundamental value position about whether you would want it to be regionalized. New Zealand says no. Scotland and Wales say yes.
Alan first.
Alan
and then Julie, R.B., and Jack.
When we talk about regions, do we leave it to the Boundary Commission to come up with the regions?
I think the Assembly, the Boundary Commission is going to probably do the fine lines, but I think that the Assembly could easily say in pretty broad and definitive terms what they thought the regions were. You know, are we talking about 17 regions, or are there five basic regions and those sorts of things? But you could go as far as you wanted in terms of defining regions. What you can't probably decide is whether it goes down 16th Avenue or 14th Avenue in Surrey, right? Some Boundary Commission is going to have to do that. But otherwise, Alan, I think you can say something about how you think about what regions mean. But until you decide whether you want that or not.
Julie.
I agree with David on his approach that we should start with the lists and build a framework from there. But what I'm, because of Fred's question before, I was sitting here thinking, well, maybe we should just take a vote on the list, whether we agree they should be open regional or open provincial or closed or whatever. And it hit me that perhaps not everybody understands the difference, and maybe you should find out first who really understands so we can take a vote so that people aren't voting on something they don't really understand.
That's fair enough. That's a kind of version of what Art was saying. And as we get to each of these, we've got to be really clear that everybody is clear. And on the seat assignment question, it really is a question of whether the lists will be one province-wide list, specifically a list of names, however the parties create them, or whether there would be separate lists for separate regions, with presumably the candidates coming out of those regions as the parties produce them.
Does everybody understand that?
The open or closed list is basically a kind of question about, and it's a separate question about, is when you have that list of candidates, do you take them in the order the party presents them? That's what a closed list basically means. And if three candidates get elected from the list, you take the top three, one, two, three, because the party has said this is our first, this is our second, this is our third, or do the voters decide who will be the first one elected from the list, who will be the second one elected from the list? That's an open one in which the voters decide which of the candidates from the list get elected.
Ken, I think Shoni and Sharon would like to talk about that clarification.
Sorry, I just had a quick question of whether how proportionality is allocated is part of this question or not, whether it's provincial allocation of proportionality or regional, because that makes a big difference of how I feel about regional lists or not.
That would be a separate question, I think, Shoni, because you can do it either way. Remember, the New Zealanders do it province-wide, essentially province-wide. The Germans do national province-wide. So, yeah.
Sharon.
Would the proportionality directly relate to the size of the region? Like if you've got a large regions, would the proportionality increase? Like if you have three large regions
rather than... This is Shoni's question, right? Because if you do it... If the allocations are province-wide, then it's not an issue. If, in fact, though, you're making the proportionality on a regional basis, it would make a difference because, depending on the district magnitude, some regions might be more proportional than others. And that's where, the Scottish case is instructive. It means the overall proportionality is a bit less because they have these kind of regional differences.
So you could have, one large area and, the north is one region and maybe... some of the other East Kootenay as one region, and have the Vancouver and the larger population area as one region, and then your proportionality would be greater that way than having...
If you did proportionality within those regions, you could get a more proportional result because you'd have a bigger district magnitude. You're exactly right.
Okay.
RB.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, we are talking about the proportional representation side of the MMP. So the whole purpose is to achieve the goals of proportionality. So, because of the need to have a process to look into our regional issues closely, to have the province broken up into some regions which... I have broken it up into 9 regions, and then having regional list to get proportionality at that regional level is a good idea, is a good thing. But at the same time, such an exercise will not give us totality in achieving proportionality province-wide, as is the case. In other jurisdictions. So we can have 2 tiers, if you like, if you want to achieve that level of proportionality. At the regional level, and then achieve the next at the provincial level. Now, either way, having regional list is a good idea. I agree with that suggestion. Now, coming to whether this list should be open or closed, is an interesting question. Now, I understood what David was saying about the benefits of having a majority open list. But before I jump into that, let us look at the close list for a minute. First of all, it's simple, easy to implement, and also by experience in other jurisdictions, we know it works a little better, if not much better, to have more women representation as well as minority representation. At the same time, we also talk about party control in such a system. Well, party control in general is bad, but certainly we are, as I said the other day, we are in a party system of government. Then who else should control the party and the party policies, party activities? So, you know, we have to look at it in the right context here. So I think it has both good and bad, but having a closed list is not a bad idea in that regard. And also, not only Germany, I think there are other countries, David, you must correct me on this, having closed list in MMPs. So, yeah, you can respond. Yeah. So, and at the same time, we also have heard enough from the public in public hearings and so on. I remember there were enough proposals to go with closed systems. So those are some benefits of the closed system. We should compare. I'm not saying we should go closed or open. I'm not adamant on any of them. I'm here to work with you all and agree on something what we all get convinced is better way to go. So those are a few points I want to say about the open and
thank you. We've got about three or four more, and then we're going to maybe take a little kind of a test and see where we're at, okay? Got Jack, Margaret, and Rick.
The graphic up there, I think, shows that we're dealing with a Rubik's Cube here, which is fine. We have to start somewhere, and I think the suggestion that's on the table is as good as any as a place to start. My concern, I think, is that at the end of the model building, what we want is a model that that maximizes, to the extent possible, in an imperfect world, all of the values, all three of the values. So I want to test the model against all three of the values. In particular, one of the trade-offs here is the relationship between local representation and proportionality, obviously. And it seems to me that if the CL balance, let's say, is 50-50, I'm quite happy with regionalists. If the CL balance is MMP light, I would want to see province-wide, not regionalists, because local representation is somewhat more adequately taken care of by having more constituency seats. So this is the sort of relationship. I'm quite happy with this, but it starts down a logic train.
Logic? Margaret, please.
I need greater clarity, I guess, about the question of how the regional lists would be organized. And in particular, I wonder whether they need to be relatively equal in terms of population. There was a suggestion behind me that there might be three regions, which would be the North, the Kootenays, and 604, I guess. And I don't think that's acceptable. I think that more division of regions would be required to make this palatable, at least to me. Because if you've got one large population center with a lot of ridings that are currently separate but that would become part of that in terms of the regional lists, that center will tend to dominate and the others will be colonized as far as voting. So if I'm misunderstanding that, that would be important for clarity.
I mean, I think it would depend on how many regions members thought that were appropriate. And their size obviously would have to be, the number of members from it would have to reflect kind of the population basis. So some regions might ultimately have more members coming from it because they had more people. That's the kind of the constitutional constraint. But the number of regions and what they might look like,
That's really a fundamentally important question, Margaret, and I think that's right. But you have to decide whether attempting to build a kind of regionalized system is what you want to do. And if so, then the question is what regions might work. And because the permutations and combinations of regions are, as you kind of imply, really quite considerable. And they will look different, and that's the kind of version of what Jack's saying, that every time you change one of these things, it kind of spills over into another one of the dimensions, and you have to, after you put them all together, you say, now, when you look at that whole package, ooh, does that look like it's going to do what we want it to do?
Rick.
Thank you. In the name of choice for the voter, why can't we propose a list that has both, a flexible list that gives the voter choice?
Do you want to say a little bit more about what you mean by that, Rick?
Well, if I'm looking at the ballot on page 19 of Anderson, and it's very clear you have a choice. If you choose to vote a party line like a closed list system, you can. If you choose to vote for an individual because you don't want to go the party line, you can. It's up to you, the voter. It's more choice. It's page 19 on the Anderson submission. It's very clear.
Yeah, those kind of systems are not so uncommon. What in practice tends to happen is that most voters will vote the party line, so they in practice become almost the same thing as closed lists. If you want, the question about open lists is whether you want to force people to be open. It's kind of like we want to force people to be free and make choices, or do you want to accept a kind? Those ballots in practice tend to be almost everywhere they're used. They end up being closed lists.
So what's the danger? If they have that choice, what's the danger of?
I'm just saying what the experience suggests happens in practice.
Are you ready to test the whole matter of regional and provincial lists? Okay, I have a hunch that there is reasonable support, consensus for taking a test. Again, we can come back to these things. This is assuming Jack's question was a good one. We did a little test yesterday, and there was a preference for mixed member proportional as opposed to MMP light. Okay, so we're assuming a good degree of proportionality. So the vote on this one is provincial lists or regional lists, okay? Provincial lists would be your first button. Regional lists would be your second button. Are you ready for this vote? Okay. Rob, before we go, do you have to say something? Yes, you have a question for it? Yeah, for clarification, absolutely.
My basic question is that we're not dealing with where the proportionality allocation is coming from. It's just that
just the principle.
Just we're looking at regional lists.
Lists as opposed to, that's right, whether they're allocated
provincially or regionally, we're not looking at
it. It's a separate question, that's right.
Thank you.
And even further clarification on that, many members have suggested, by the way, that if we can get through today in terms of principles, that might be about as far as one might get in building the MMP system, and that should next week it survive the test, then we start building the real details later. I mean, some details follow it. But right now we're looking at principles. So the question is provincial or regionalist. Now, Chuck, is this a clarification of the question? Okay.
Just one quick thing. Are there any constraints on the number of MLAs that can come from each regional list?
That can be elected or can be put on a list?
That
could be elected.
We've got a riding that's got a DM of one. In that region, can there be three or four people from a list assigned to come from that region? I mean, we need this plus or minus 25%, right?
Yeah, it has
but
to be within
do
the
we
population
need that, Do we need that plus or minus 25% in a regional list from the list? In other words, if we in this system, could we have elect one person from a northern riding and then in the regional list ask for four more?
No, I think that the courts would say that if you have a regional system, the region as a whole could only have so many MLAs, and that would reflect its population base.
As it is now.
Some of them would be from the constituency side, and some would be from the list side.
But there are no constraints on the list side, so why couldn't you have more from the north?
There are total constraints for the region that are population constraints, that are constitutional, to defend the kind of equal votes kind of principle.
So the question before you then is, should the list be allocated on a provincial basis or regional basis? And if you believe it should be done on a provincial basis, you press button 1. And if you think it should be done on a regional basis, you push button 2. No? Yes? Jay?
You just said that the list should be allocated on a provincial basis. What you meant was assigned, right?
Assigned, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Any further clarifications or reprimands? Well, you just had that look of my school teacher.
It's a fundamentally important question. You're right.
It is. I'm sorry about that. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. And it's nice to be reprimanded nicely. So, provincial, number 1. Regional, number 2. Are you ready? Okay. Press your buttons.
One, two, three, go. It's about sort of the same kind of ratio.
So I think it's fairly clear that the view of the assembly is that it ought to be on a regional basis. Okay? The other question that I don't feel ready for yet is whether the list should be open or closed. That's the other big question. Would you like further discussion of that? Or do you want to vote? Okay, then the number 1 button is open, and the 2nd button is closed, okay? Any clarification on the question? Okay, yes, Margaret.
If it's open, would one be able to have above the list voting?
Well, this really is Rick's kind of question. You know, can you give voters the option of just voting a list, or do you force them to choose a candidate? In that sense, I guess there'd be two kinds of open lists. In practice, those would turn into closed lists. Those above the line kinds of systems, in one version or another, tend to do that. But maybe that doesn't make the question clear enough.
Darren and David.
Well, my question is, would above-the-line voting even apply? I mean, I think above-the-line is with respect to single transferable vote. In this kind of system, you would be selecting one candidate, casting one party vote on an open list.
Well, Margaret is asking whether you could just vote for the list as it happened to be there. If they were randomized, then, of course, that option wouldn't be there. So I guess, David, you said?
David, yeah.
I guess there's two questions here. One, there's a party vote, and then there's an opportunity to vote for the order of the list. And I don't know if this is an answer to the question, but I don't see a particular reason why you couldn't have a party vote and then not bother to actually indicate a preference for your candidates on the list, which would be kind of like an above-the-line vote. There is no party order. The order would be determined by the votes for the candidates on the list. But if you didn't want to do that, you didn't have to. You could still vote for the party. In the party vote.
Bob, on this issue? Okay.
Okay, would not one option be having the voters just select the top 5 of their choice instead of having to rank the whole list? That way they wouldn't have to select the whole list. They could just pick their top 5 or top 3.
Most open lists, I think, Bob, people just, in fact, choose one. And what happens, of course, is that they count all the votes for all the candidates on the list, and that's a measure of how many votes the party gets. And then out of that, you decide, okay, how many then seats will the party get? Then you go back and see which of the candidates had the most votes.
Lil, on this issue? Thank you.
For the purposes of our voting today, couldn't we just have three choices? You could vote open list, closed list, or vote the third choice be to leave it as an above the line list.
Ken, what do you think?
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, the real question is, do you want to have a system that forces the voters to choose, or do you basically want to leave it in the hands of the parties? And above the lines, I mean, to use that jargon, really essentially leaves it in the hands of the parties.
Okay, we have a few more members who wish to address this question that's going to be put before us. Rick is next.
I'm just really surprised at the resistance. If people want to vote the party line, they have that opportunity. It's what's the resistance to the voter choice? You know, everybody wants to maximize voter choice in one system and not the other. What's the problem?
Sharon, do you still want to speak? You've applauded. I thought maybe you were just agreeing. Go ahead.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but isn't above-the-line voting a form of open voting? And the question before us is whether we want open or closed, and then we can decide whether we want above-the-line voting with our open decision later on?
Can we do that later?
I mean, in that sense, Rick's right, that kind of an above-the-line option is a kind of open option, where one of the options is just to vote the party's order rather than your own. So in some sense, that's a kind of de facto third choice.
Within the open choice.
Yes, basically.
Yeah. Sheila, do you still want to speak on this issue?
Yes.
Okay.
To echo Rick's point, one of the things that we did here repeatedly at the public hearings and online was that people wanted the ability to make choices. An open list gives maximum opportunity for people to make those choices.
Okay. We're getting close to that. Are you ready for the question or more clarification? Is this a really important clarification, Amanda? I mean, no lobbying now. We've got the... Okay, question.
Could we have three choices for the buttons? One for the closed, one for open, and one for the optional whatever thing that Rick is talking about?
Sure.
Ken, do you want to explain what button three would be?
Well, I guess...
Let's vote open or closed. If we vote closed, then we can discuss. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I think we should go open and close and then do variations of what we choose.
Well, you might want to do open and close. Then if people vote for open, one of the options would be either individual candidates or a party list kind of thing.
Let's go with a vote. Okay? So the first button is open. Second button is closed. Then we will discuss what we have done with our decision. Not for very long, though. Okay. So ready? First is open, second is closed. Go ahead. Pretty clear cut. So under open, there are some options, and we can discuss those later when we're doing the details of the system. Okay? Dr. Carty, we can move on.
That seems reasonable. The forms those open lists might take and the kind of choices we can deal with. Well, I'm in your hands as to what you would want to do next. In some sense, the allocation question is a pretty fundamental one, and does it seem sensible to go there? Okay, the basic question is, do you want to have the proportionality at the provincial level so that basically the seats in the legislature would represent in proportional terms the votes provincially? Or do you want to think about saying, well, in some sense we want to kind of have regional allocations, and so that if some regions have greater propensity for one party or another, their members would reflect their regional proportions. I mean, that's essentially what happens in Scotland and Wales, I guess. So is it overall proportionality, or do you want to have a system in which the region's own proportionality is reflected? That would probably mean, given that regions would probably behave somewhat differently, that the overall total proportionality might not be, would not mirror that of the province, but it would mirror the individual distinct regions. And of course, how that would balance out would depend on what those regions were and their relative sizes. So I think that, without getting into the kind of all the details of how you might work that, that's basically the fundamental kind of question that's at stake.
Brad has a question for you.
Our group yesterday wanted to determine how, you, if you took a provincial allocation, how would you assign those seats regionally, given that, how would you know where to put the Liberals candidate, where to put the New Democrat candidate, where to put the Green candidate?
Well, there are a number of different kinds of ways of doing that. And, you know, we really are into the technicalities of the stuff. There's a, on, and working through an example is the best way to see it. I think the best example of that of the submissions, if I remember correctly, is probably Day's submission, Wilfred Day's, where he actually works through, you know, line by line, you know, how those assignments basically work to get that particular result. But the real question is, what kind of result do you want? And his examples are this kind of national figure and these provincial ones, and it would take us a while to kind of... But, I mean, those are mostly technical kinds of questions as to which parties get their seats and which...
The concern was that a region would end up with a candidate that didn't necessarily represent their views. So if you had a Liberal candidate put into a region that had voted New Democrat for the last 10 elections?
Well, remember, first of all, they're going to have all their constituency members. And then the question is, how are the regional seats allocated? And it is true that under these systems, and you can see it if you follow through Day's example, that sometimes you can have cases where if a certain party has to have so many seats allocated, then you look around and find which regions they did best in. They come from their regional list. But those candidates are always coming from a regional list, so they are regional candidates. And so the question is, if the Green Party, or let's call it the Red Party or the Blue Party or some other party, is entitled to 3 seats, and they have no constituencies, you've got to find the particular regions from which a blue candidate would come, and that would depend on where they've done best, basically.
Okay, we've got Julie, Tanis, Edith, and Wendy.
My question basically is a carry-on from Brad's, because Mr. Day's submission, and as well Andre on his on the forum, he had given us a link to look at exactly how the, you know, how you take the province, or in Germany it's a countrywide proportionality, and how it's allocated in regional lists. My question for you was, can we take something like the German example, or Mr. Day's example, which is close, and have open lists versus closed lists?
Yes, because open lists is just a matter of which individual fills a seat. We're talking about which party gets the seats. You've got to decide which parties get the seats first before you decide who fills them. You know, the assignment question from the lists are who the people are. The allocation questions are which parties get them before we decide who actually fills them.
But we're looking at those examples, you get a really clear picture of exactly what Brad was asking you.
Yeah, it's a rather complicated set of calculations, but it kind of works out in the way that I hope I was trying to describe.
Tanis.
Just my general sort of gut level reaction to regional allocations is that it could possibly be a divisive measure for the province, And I'm not sure if that's played out in other countries, but I would like us to, I think, my sense is, to vote more provincially as a, so that we kind of keep the province as a whole or something, as opposed to, you know, the left-wing region, the right-wing, you know what I mean. Okay, thanks, bye.
Other comments?
Well, Edith is next, and I think she's going to comment as well.
Okay, I'm going for regional allocation, regional proportionality. I think that we're a very large area with, I mean, we've heard so much about the diversity of our regions that each region ought to have the flavor in its region of its politics that represents that region's views. And if you went for a provincial list, then small parties with small regional concerns would have no real hope of getting elected on the list side of their region, because provincially they don't get enough votes to actually do it. The other thing is we already do have divisive politics. I mean, you know, you've got the areas that are going to be more liberal. You've got areas that have voted NDP for the last, you know, five decades, and other regions that have voted on the left side, or the right side, forever as well. And, I mean, you're not going to get rid of that. You know, people have those views. But I think the more we would have less proportionality provincially, but we would have more local representation if we did proportional within the region.
Okay. Wendy? Where is Wendy?
Hiding over
there. Yeah, sir. Okay.
One question I have is whether or not if we used a proportional... The provincial not sure I got the right words here. Provincial proportionality and then assigned seats to the regions, if we would have less chance of having a problem with overhang seats.
Probably. The least problem of overhang is likely to be province-wide, province-wide. The largest problem is likely to be regional-regional. But... you know, that depends on how many parties there are and what vote distributions are. But, yes, there's likely to be more challenge of dealing with the overhang problem in that scenario.
So we have four more members wishing to speak, and maybe after the four we'll test as to whether we're ready for five members ready to speak, and then we'll see whether we are ready to test the question. Diana.
I think, first of all, we've dealt with the local representation value by saying we'll make it a regional list. And so the other value that we have let slip here, as far as I'm concerned, is proportionality. So the only way to me to make this a win-win for everybody is to go with a provincial allocation. I'm crystal clear on that. Otherwise, why are we even looking at an MMP? Like, if we're not going to be worried at all about proportionality.
Rob.
Diane kind of said pretty much what I was going to say, in the fact that we had two basic tenets, well, three, but two of the key ones were local representation, which we've addressed with the regional lists, and the proportionality aspect, and basically just what she said, that if we're going to be looking at any form of proportionality, it's got to be provincial-wide.
Okay. Shoni, on this issue?
To a certain extent reiterating what Diana was saying, but in answer to what Edith said, traditionally regional parties do have a stronger chance in riding seats because their support does tend to be regionally concentrated, so they wouldn't necessarily be left out of it. They are right now because there's no incentive to have more than two parties. And in terms of regional proportionality, it's actually a bit of a contradiction in terms. In order to make the regions meaningful at all, have some geographic connection with the communities within them, have some geographic connection, some regions would be so small that there would only be three or four list seats. And so there's no proportionality there when you're dealing with such small seats. It's not just giving up a little bit of proportionality. It's giving up a lot.
Okay, we'll take three more comments, and then we will test it for the vote on this issue. Wilf, Craig, and Margaret. Wilf?
At the risk of appearing paranoid, why isn't... local representation anywhere on that printout?
What's the question, Wilf? That's on another issue, Wilf. You're not. Are you talking about the allocation?
No, I'm talking. We're talking principles. We have proportionality there, but yeah. We don't have local representation.
Second one, and we're going to come back to that, Wilf. Okay. Craig.
Yeah, I've got a question. Will this be affecting the ability of smaller parties to get elected? Will provincial with a province-wide allocation, will that allow smaller parties to be getting seats?
I think the short answer is we don't exactly know from comparative evidence. On principle, you would think yes, because of district magnitude questions. If you look at what's happened in Scotland, which uses regional allocation, regional assignments, there have been some. It's hard to know whether they're small parties or just kind of independents, you know, who've managed to find a way in that system. But I think the basic answer probably has to be yes, because it's fundamentally a district magnitude question, isn't it, Craig?
Okay, Margaret, you may have the last comment on this before a vote. We'll see.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
Just to be very concrete, if we had proportionality based on regional allocation for regions, then if in an election a particular region voted 50% for party A, 30% for party B, and 20% for party C, then that would be how the seats in that region were allocated or were divided among the parties. But if we had provincial and the provincial vote was in the reverse order, then the seats in that region would be allocated according to the provincial order, not the regional order. Is that the bottom line for this?
No, I don't. Do you want to explain it, David?
Provincially, that's how the list seats would end up provincially, but the list seats are then assigned to the regions based on where the votes are. So, for example, if you have one region, say, you know, the Red Party got 40% of the list seats provincially, but they only got 20% in one region, they would tend not to get list seats in that region. They would tend to get list seats in the regions where they had more vote.
So it would not be as great a distortion of the regional choice as it might appear, that which was really, I guess, the gist of my question.
That's my understanding, too, correct?
Yes, David is explaining exactly how the German system works, which is what is that was your question.
Jay, on that particular issue? Okay.
You kind of lost me because I thought that the point of provincial proportionality was to give a voice to the people whose vote doesn't count. My understanding was that the people who voted, if you get 60% for a party, pardon me, in a region, that party got the constituency seat, therefore that vote is represented. So I thought that when you allocated, you would be allocating on a province-wide basis, not based on how many people voted for that party in that region.
Do you want to rejoin on that?
The number of seats that a party gets, on list seats that a party gets, will be based on a provincial-wide proportional calculation. But where those seats are assigned would depend on the popularity of the party in the various regions. So you're sensitive to the fact that, you know, if you've got a lot of votes in one particular region for that party, then they may get a little bit more from the list seats from that party because that's where the votes were, even if they didn't get constituency seats, if you get my gist. There's ways of balancing it so that the overall it's not a huge difference, but it's you end up provincially with a more accurate proportional result, but the seats would actually be assigned to regions where their vote really came from. And so in terms of small parties, there'd be, like any PR system, they would be have opportunities to be on the list, provided they made the threshold.
Is that clear? It's not Brett.
Well, let me try and I think essentially what David has said. Let's assume a party is entitled to 10 seats off the list. So they're going to get 10 seats to bring them up to proportion. The question is, where should those seats come from? Where should they be assigned? And the basic principle is that they should be assigned to those areas where they haven't won constituency seats but have a fair number of votes. So the total number of list seats they're entitled to depends on their total vote share. Which of the regional lists they come off of depends on which regions they did best in. So they did much better in one region, more of their list seats would come from that region than another, all things equal in population terms. Does that help, Jay?
Brad?
Going back on Margaret's point, though, if we have three-party ABC, and in all the regions, they come in ABC, so provincially, A ranks one, B ranks middle, C ranks last. ABC are allocated seats. Theoretically, B and C are going to be put somewhere where A actually came in first. Am I correct on that?
Well, A is going to have one constituency seat,
right,
where they've come in first. And so if B is entitled to so many list seats, they're going to be spread across the province, but there's going to be more in the areas where they did better than where they didn't do so well. So it's a matter of where they, you look at where B's, what votes B got, and say, B got all their votes in one region, or they got votes in this region and that region, and therefore their list seats ought to reflect their regional distributions.
I still don't understand the mechanics, but it works.
Yeah. Trust me? No.
Okay, Jay, for clarification.
I think the key phrase there, Ken, is that they get allocated seats where they don't have constituency seats, and that makes
sense.
Well,
all list seats are like that, right? I mean, these are to compensate because you don't win constituencies. That's the point of an MMP system, remember? Won constituencies, but you were discriminated against because you didn't win any. You got lots of votes but didn't win constituencies, so the P part is supposed to balance that up to give you. So if you get 40% of the votes and get no seats, theory is you're supposed to get 40% of the overall seat of the legislature, and if you haven't won them in constituency, they have to come from the list part. So what happens, of course, remember, in MMP systems is that parties that win lots of constituency seats don't get many list seats. In New Zealand, in the last election, the Labour Party, which formed the government, only got 5 seats off the list. Lots of smaller parties got more. But that's because Labour won all those constituency seats, 50 or 60 of them. So they'd already won their share of the legislature by winning the constituency votes. So the list parts are to kind of compensate for shares that you haven't won because the constituency system didn't let you. So that's kind of why it works out like that, Jay.
Are you ready to vote on this issue? Okay. I have a few other people listed, but I think we're ready to vote. So it's the PR allocation, A, first button, provincial, second button, regional, okay? First button, provincial, second button, regional. Go ahead and vote. Sorry?
Aren't we asking whether or not we're going to vote? The proportionality is going to be province-wide?
Yes. The first button is allocation is province-wide. Second button is regional. Is that clear?
I guess so.
Okay. Vote. Sure. Pardon me? Not voting. Rob, we've got a problem?
Houston, we have a problem.
Again?
My goodness, we have to maybe resort to hands. Should we vote again, Rob? Okay, we're flying. Let's see what happens.
Vote now.
Vote now.
Only once.
Not working.
We're going to vote again. Okay? Take it off the screen.
The total number didn't seem to add up as much as before, so.
Now, don't be influenced by the numbers you saw there. We're all voting again. Okay? As we say, every vote is, we can revisit every vote here. So, again, the question is, these the allocation of the seats, A, number one, on a provincial basis, number two, a regional basis. Is that clear? Vote. That's pretty clear.
Well, I'm not sure where you want to go next. Maybe for light relief, we could go to the constituency side of the system for a while. There are various options here, of course. There's the existing plurality rule, which is, in fact, what's used in other MMP systems, but there's also the possibility of the alternative vote. And I guess in either of these, there's also the possibility of the none of the above. I know there was a vigorous discussion about that last weekend in the evening session, and whether people want to raise that possibility again. But are there views on the constituency side of the system? After all, this is where a large number of members are going to be elected.
Ken, I wonder if we could clarify what the key issues are for the constituency side again.
It's basically half the system, or 60% or 40%, whatever the final number actually works out, are going to be elected in single-member districts as they are now. How do you want to elect those people? What kind of rules, what kind of principles do you want on that side of the system?
Diana's asking which slide?
I think it's maybe number five or six. Number six, maybe. On those notes.
Slide six, and Derek has a question.
Derek.
If I may, I'd like to cast my support towards an alternative vote. I think it's a much clearer indication of voters' preference in a constituency. The assumption right now is that people's one vote indicates their true, most heartfelt preference for that riding, and I don't believe it is the case. I'm talking to a lot of people. Some of the biggest concerns in terms of true preferences are strategic voting and fears of vote splitting. I believe those would be very easily eliminated and quite elegantly by an alternative vote in the ridings.
I think Amanda, I saw that lime green arm flashing out there, Amanda.
Just to go against Derek, even though I agree with voter choice, I think that's very important. I'm concerned that if you have, say, alternative vote on one side, and when we do the other seats on the other side, and you're only choosing one on that side, if you have two on one and one on the other, that can actually become a little bit confusing. People will pick two on both sides, and then they'll have a spoiled ballot. So I'm actually going towards first past the post, in my opinion.
Rob.
I'd like to cast my thoughts in with Amanda there on a couple of reasons, both with the simplicity and also just from a point of familiarity. The electorate knows the system. They're familiar with it. Most people don't like a lot of change anyways, and as the vote in the referendum in Vancouver yesterday showed, you really have to make it something that's going to be workable for them. Thanks.
George?
We wanted voter choice. It's the only way to have voter choice to have AV.
Sheila?
I'm for AV. I believe that the person that's representing the local area should be there with a majority of the support of the voter that's behind them. And I think that AV is the only way that that happens.
Thank you. Wendy?
I feel pretty strongly that we should have alternative vote. Probably one of the things I hate most about our current system is the strategic voting, the split voting and all that kind of stuff. So it's really important to me that we have an alternative vote here so that we can choose a riding representative who matches most to the preferences of the people in the riding.
Thanks, Derek.
Just a caution before we start talking about last night's Vancouver vote, as if it means anything, that the turnout was a whopping 22%.
Anne? Where did I find Anne?
Right here. Over here, Jack.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I was fighting for AV and group yesterday because I agree with voter choice and to bring the fight for the seat right down to the local level. But a number of my group members were talking about how complicated the ballot would become. And so if I could get just a little clarification, does it really make the ballot very, very long and complicated if we go to that system?
Well, it depends on whether it was one ballot or two. You might have a one ballot for your local representative and one for your party side, or it might be combined in two. But I don't see why it should be that much more complicated. If they were even on the one page, you'd ask people to rank them 1, 2, 3, and then cast the party vote on the other side. Which would be the most efficient way, I guess, would.
So all the names are still there. Just a matter of how you select them. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take first speakers in priority. CJ?
In our group yesterday, we discussed at length AV versus first past the post. And one of the main things that got me excited after I was selected to the assembly was the fact that I would no longer have to bring my handcuffs into the voter booth with me and find out that, oh, really, there's 7 names on my ballot, but because the party selected the names that are on there, really, I only get to pick 2 of them. And really, I'm looking at this list going, wow, how depressing. Not because those individuals are not going to do a good job, but I just really don't feel anything for them. So I'm rubber stamping what Party A or Party B put there for me. In AV, I can at least pick my party, and then I can at least have a look at the candidate I think that's going to serve my riding the best. And I think we should take the opportunity to put that forward.
Okay, about 4 or 5 more speakers, and then we'll test the four, and then we'll test where we're going to go. Jerry?
I know that we're managed to look at the best system for BC, but I'm also concerned about presenting a system that has a chance to be accepted if we recommend a change. And so looking at some, perhaps making some level of incremental change that's better. And so I'm sort of leaning towards first past the post for this part of the system because it's familiar and we're already changing a substantial part of the other aspects of the system. Thanks.
Okay. Tom.
Yeah, I had a good discussion. I got pretty much stomped on in our discussion, but I was for FDPT, just because I really don't like the way that AV works out. Just you don't necessarily get the person that most people like. You get the person that more than half the people can live with. And I don't know if I want somebody like that representing me.
Okay, we have, as speakers, we have Jill, Cheryl, and Shoni. I think there's one other, Rick, then we'll kind of test it, okay? So let's see if we can get through this fairly quickly. Rob, first.
Just in response to Derek's comment about the voter turnout being a whopping 22%, that might be true, but the provincial votes, well, I don't know the exact numbers, aren't, you know, 100%. So, I mean, it's still some indication of what the people are feeling out there.
Shoni, something new? Okay. Jill.
Thanks. Initially, I was leaning towards first past the post for the reasons that Jerry outlined. But one of my understandings of what happened in New Zealand was the first time around there were coalition partners that were declared that people disliked, that went really awry, and that was part of the reason that people were a little ticked off at MMP initially. And looking at the notes we got, it looks like AV will give parties some incentive to declare their preferred coalition partners in advance. So for that reason alone, I think I'll support AV.
Okay, maybe the last speaker, Cheryl.
Hi, I just don't feel it's fair to BC, the voters of BC, to vote first past the post just because it's a familiar process. We're here to build a system that's best for BC, and I feel AV gives them the most choice, and that's my comment.
Well, Shoni, you gave up your opportunity last time, so if... No, I was. If you had something new to add?
I didn't want to give up my...
You don't want to give it up, okay? Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think when we were looking at AV as a system-wide, my memory of it was that AV and FT, first past the post, don't create that much different outcomes. And so if the outcome's not that much different, it's really great telling voters you're getting more voter choice, but it's a little patronizing if it's a symbolic choice and in the end you end up with the same outcome. So for me, I sort of think that's change for the sake of change that's not actually going to accomplish much and may add a level of complexity.
Okay, again, I've got four more speakers. Are you ready for the vote? Let's vote. Okay, let's vote and see where we're at. And if we need to come back to this, we will. So the vote is, first of all, button one would be first past the post. Button two would be alternative vote. Okay, button one, first past the post. Button two, alternative vote. Push your buttons. It's clear, but it's closer. But it's a clear decision there. Yes. Just one sec. A couple of comments of clarification about where this leads us. Rick?
This was a question I wanted to ask before the vote, but now that we've had the vote, on an AV ballot, is the voter forced to complete the AV ballot? Is that something they have to fill out, or do they have a choice to vote for one without it being a spoiled ballot?
Well, if you're an Australian, you have to vote for them, but
our context, could we incorporate that without forcing people?
Yes, you can okay. Make the rule either way.
Okay.
As I say, if you're an Australian, we know what you do because they're compulsives. In some sense, this doesn't for, here's an interesting example of Jack's thing about how these things ripple over. It doesn't foreclose the question of one vote or two, but it does kind of suggest that we really are talking about a two-vote kind of arrangement, because then if you're thinking about one vote, you'd probably be just thinking about the first preferences. So it sounds like that this is probably going to be a two-vote kind of system. Is that kind of right? I mean, this is a very interesting example of how these things do kind of gluppa 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 on top. And I don't know whether we want to have a kind of just sense of that, but is there a widespread agreement that we really are talking about having two separate votes, one for each half? Any dissension on that?
Okay, that's good.
So, but I think it's a very good example of the kinds of things Jack was talking about, and how when you start building these things, it's one thing kind of implies or another.
You know, one thing we might want to raise, break is at 10 o'clock. We have another 10 minutes. We had, in one of our last evening on Saturday, we had quite a good discussion of none of the above option. I'm wondering whether we want to have that discussion now to see if there's support for none of the above option. George, Douglas.
I am not in favor of going that way. I think we've got a lot of work to do. I think if it was discussed last night, you've probably come up to some conclusions. We need to deal with the business at hand and move on.
Mary, and then Diana, and then Sam.
I agree with Doug. I think that a lot of work and energy is going into what we're doing here, and to focus on a negative aspect is not something that I want to spend my time on.
Diana?
Yeah, I agree with the two previous speakers, and I think none of the above is a very negative way of getting people to the polls.
Sam and then Taya.
I like none of the above. Can we move on now, please?
And then Craig and Wendy, and I think we're going to kind of put this to a vote. Taya?
This is kind of off topic, but before I forget, when we were just talking about regions, I was just really hoping that maybe we could revisit Mr. Ray's division of the regions. Remember he spoke to us last weekend about it?
We can, after we get back, let's clarify what the question is. I'm not quite sure I understand it. We'll clarify it. We can raise it. Any further discussion on the question of none of the above, or should we have the question? Wendy? Craig? Okay, Wendy?
I think it's very interesting from a psychological and sociological point of view why so many people here don't like none of the above. It's an extra voter choice, and it's a way to make a personal protest. But I recognize that most people here just don't like it.
I think I have Craig, right, and then Jean and Anne.
I agree with Wendy. I actually support the none of the above option. It is a choice, and if people want to make it, what are you guys scared of? It's what's going to hurt you. Statistically, the people aren't going to go for it, and no one's going to get likely is going to get voted in that way anyways. Likely. But what are you scared of? Is it choice?
Gene?
I think it's an insult to the intelligence of the Canadian or BC voter. None of the above is not only is it negative, it doesn't add anything. You can do that by just spoiling your vote. So let's not insult the intelligence of the voter any further.
I think we'll take Anne, and then we'll take the vote. Anne?
I think the choice of none of the above is by not going to the polling booth to place your vote in the first place. And I think we're spending a lot of time and effort here to correct the choices, and so we are creating choices, so you don't need to choose that option anymore.
Okay, last person, Cherie. You've not spoken forever, so we'll get you.
I actually think we should have none of the above. Why not? Why should we assume that people aren't coming to the polls as that is their protest? Why not see if they just don't like any of the candidates? Maybe they're not coming to the polls for other reasons. I don't see, like, making assumptions is insulting the intelligence of people as well.
Let's have a vote on this one. I don't think it's going to change anyone's views, any of the discussion. So you've got buttons there, and the question is, should we recommend none of the above? The first button is yes. The second button is no. You got it? The question is, shall we recommend none of the above? The first button is yes. The second button is no. Press your buttons. Just don't vote.
You can't have abstain none of the above.
That's fairly clear. Okay, we're going to have our break, 10 o'clock. Be back here at 10:30.